So an elderly couple go to their doctor to ask what they can do to improve their short-term memory. Forgetfulness is common at your age. Just get into the habit of writing the things down that you need to do, and then it won't be so easy to forget. So later that evening, the couple settles down to watch some TV when the husband gets up from his chair and starts to leave the room. "Where are you going?" the wife asks. "I'm just going to get a bowl of ice cream from the kitchen. Would you like some?" "Oh, that would be nice, dear," the wife replies. "But remember what the doctor said? Maybe you should write it down so you won't forget." The husband becomes slightly irritated at her comment and says, "I think I can remember 2 bowls of ice cream." "Okay," she says, but adds, "Do you think you could add some chocolate syrup to the top of mine? Maybe you should write it down." "I think I can remember 2 bowls of ice cream and to put some chocolate syrup on top of one of them." "Okay," she answers. "Then do you think maybe you could add some nuts too? I love peanuts on my ice cream, and maybe you should write it down." The husband really starts to get irritated. He says, "I think I can remember 2 bowls of ice cream and to put chocolate syrup and nuts on top of one of them." Okay, no need to get upset. I was just trying to help." Then she adds, "Oh, do you know what really sounds good? To add some whipped cream and a cherry on the top. Now that is a lot to remember. You really should write it down. I think I can remember 2 bowls of ice cream with chocolate syrup, nuts, a cherry, and some whipped cream on top of one of them." The husband responds angrily, and he storms off into the kitchen. 20 minutes go by, and the wife starts becoming anxious, wondering what's taking her husband so long in the kitchen, when suddenly he enters the room with 2 plates of bacon and eggs. She says, "See, I told you you should have written it down. You forgot the toast." So last week, this is a hard transition, to talk about Judas. So last week, Rob talked about Judas and kind of what Judas ended up doing to betray Jesus and things like that. And if you remember, we're going through our series, I Want to Know Jesus. And Jesus is on his final march to the cross. Basically, he was approaching Jerusalem. And now he's on his final march to the cross. And that's where we are in the passage today. So basically, what I thought I would do, instead of just preaching on the passage, what I'm going to do is I took the 4 Gospels and going from basically right at the end of the scene in the upper room to right before Pilate sends Jesus off to be whipped. I did my best to mix the account of the 4 Gospels and put it into one story. And I was actually surprised at how hard that was to do. The Gospels definitely harmonize, and there aren't any contradictions. It's really hard to do. It was a very good exercise for me, and I hope you enjoy. So what I've done is I've taken some slides from Passion of the Christ. If you've seen that movie or not, I don't know. But I'm going to go ahead and read through the narrative. I've mixed the 4 Gospels together. If the wording sounds a little bit weird at points, it's because I did my best not to change any of the words whatsoever so that you'd get everything that was there. So let's go through the story right now. Then Jesus asked them, I'm starting in Luke 22 is where I'm going to be starting from. "When I sent you out to preach the good news and you did not have money, a traveler's bag or an extra pair of sandals, did you need anything?" "No," they replied. "But now," he said, "take your money and a traveler's bag, and if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one. For the time has come for this prophecy about me to be fulfilled. He was counted among the rebels. Yes, everything written down about me by the prophets will come true." "Look, Lord," they replied, "we have 2 swords among us." "That's enough," he said. Then, accompanied by his disciples, Jesus left the upstairs room and went as usual to the Mount of Olives. On the way, Jesus told them, "Tonight, all of you will desert me, for the scriptures say God will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I've been raised from the dead, I will go ahead of you into Galilee and meet you there." Peter declared, "Even if everyone deserts you, I will never desert you." Jesus replied, "I tell you the truth, Peter, this very night, before the rooster crows, you'll deny me 3 times that you even know me." "No," Peter insisted, "even if I have to die with you, I will never deny you." And all the other disciples vowed the same. They went to the olive grove called Gethsemane, and Jesus said, "Sit here while I go and pray." He took Peter, James and John with him, and he became deeply troubled and distressed. He told them, "My soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." And he went on a little farther and fell to the ground. He prayed that if it were possible, the awful hour awaiting him might pass him by. "Abba, Father," he cried out, "everything is possible for you. Please take this cup of suffering away from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine." Then an angel from heaven appeared and strengthened him, and he prayed more fervently. And he was in such agony of spirit that his sweat fell to the ground like great drops of blood. Then he returned and found the disciples asleep. He said to Peter, "Simon, are you asleep? Couldn't you watch with me even 1 hour? Keep watch and pray so that you will not give in to temptation. For the spirit is willing, but the body is weak." Then Jesus left them again and prayed the same prayer as before. When he returned to them again, he found them sleeping, for they couldn't keep their eyes open, and they didn't know what to say. And when he returned to them a third time, he said, "Go ahead and sleep. Have your rest. But no, the time has come. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Up, let's get going. Look, my betrayer is here." Judas the betrayer knew this place because Jesus had often gone there with his disciples. The leading priests and Pharisees had given Judas a contingent of Roman soldiers and temple guards to accompany him. Now with blazing torches, lanterns, and armed with swords and clubs, they arrived at the olive grove. The traitor Judas had given them a prearranged signal. "You'll know which one to arrest when I greet him with a kiss. Then you can take him away under guard." And as soon as they arrived, Jesus fully realized what was going to happen to him, so he stepped forward to meet them. "Who are you looking for?" he asked. "Jesus the Nazarene," they replied. "I am he," Jesus said. Judas, who betrayed him, was standing there with them. And as Jesus said, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. Judas walked up to Jesus. "Rabbi," he exclaimed, and he gave him the kiss. But Jesus said, "Judas, would you betray the Son of Man with a kiss? My friend, go ahead and do what you've come for." Once again, he asked them, "Who are you looking for?" Again, they replied, "Jesus the Nazarene." "I told you that I am he," Jesus said. "And since I'm the one you want, let these others go." And he did this to fulfill his own statement. "I did not lose a single one of these that you have given to me." Then the others grabbed Jesus and arrested him. When the other disciples saw what was about to happen, they exclaimed, "Lord, should we fight? We brought the swords." Then Simon Peter drew his sword and slashed off the right ear of Malchus, the high priest's slave. But Jesus said to Peter, "No more of this. Put your sword back into its sheath. Shall I not drink from the cup of suffering that the Father has given me? Those who use the sword will die by the sword. Don't you realize that I could ask my Father for thousands of angels to protect us, and he would send them instantly? But if I did, how would the scriptures be fulfilled that described what happened now?" And he touched the man's ear, and he healed him. Then Jesus spoke to the leading priests, the captains of the temple guard, and the elders who had come for him. "Am I some dangerous revolutionary," he asked, "that you come with swords and clubs to arrest me? Why didn't you arrest me in the temple? I was there every day." But this is all happening to fulfill the words of the prophets as recorded in the scriptures. "This is your moment, the time when the power of darkness reigns." At that point, all the disciples deserted him and fled. One young man following behind was clothed only in a linen shirt. And when the mob tried to grab him, he slipped out of his shirt and ran away naked. So the soldiers, their commanding officer, and the temple guards arrested Jesus and tied him up. First, they took him to Annas, the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest at the time. Caiaphas was the one who had told the other Jewish leaders, "It's better that one man should die for the people." Simon Peter followed Jesus, as did another of the disciples. The other disciple was acquainted with the high priest, so he was allowed to enter the high priest's courtyard with Jesus. Peter had to stay outside the gate. Then the disciple who knew the high priest spoke with the woman watching the gate and let Peter in. The woman asked Peter, "You're not one of those that man's disciples, are you?" "No," he said, "I'm not." Because it was cold, the household servants and the guards had made a charcoal fire, and they stood around it, warming themselves. And Peter stood with them, warming himself. Inside, the high priest began asking Jesus about his followers and what he had been teaching them. Jesus replied, "Everyone knows what I teach. I have preached regularly in the synagogues and the temple where the people gather. I have not spoken in secret. Why are you asking me this question? Ask those who heard me. They know what I said." Then one of the temple guards standing nearby slapped Jesus across the face. "Is that the way to answer the high priest?" he demanded. Jesus replied, "If I said anything wrong to you, you must prove it. But if I'm speaking the truth, why are you beating me?" Then Annas bound Jesus and sent him to Caiaphas, the high priest. They took Jesus to the high priest's home, where the leading priests, the elders, and the teachers of the religious law had gathered. Meanwhile, Peter followed him at a distance and went right into the high priest's courtyard. There he sat with the guards, warming himself by the fire. Inside, the leading priests and the entire high council were trying to find evidence against Jesus so they could put him to death. But they couldn't find any. Many false witnesses spoke against him, but they contradicted each other. Finally, some men stood up and gave this false testimony. "We heard him say, 'I will destroy this temple made with human hands, and in 3 days I will build another made without human hands.'" But even they didn't get their story straight. Then the high priest stood up before the others and asked Jesus, "Well, aren't you going to answer these charges? What do you have to say for yourself?" But Jesus was silent and he made no reply. Then the high priest asked him, "Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One?" Jesus said, "I am. And you will see the Son of Man seated in the place of power at God's right hand and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his clothing to show his horror and said, "Why do we need other witnesses? You've all heard this blasphemy. What is your verdict?" "Guilty," they all cried. "He deserves to die." Then some of them began to spit at him, and they blindfolded him and beat him with their fists. "Prophesy to us," they jeered, and the guards slapped him as they took him away. Meanwhile, Simon Peter was standing by the fire warming himself. They asked him again, "You're not one of those disciples, are you?" He denied it, saying, "No, I'm not." But one of the household slaves of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked, "Didn't I see you out there in the olive grove with Jesus? You must be one of them. We can tell by your Galilean accent." Peter swore, "A curse on me if I'm lying. I don't know the man." And immediately the rooster crowed. Suddenly, Jesus' words flashed through Peter's mind. "Before the rooster crows, you will deny me 3 times that you even know me." And he went away weeping bitterly. The leading priests and the elders of the people met again to lay plans for putting Jesus to death. And they bound him and led him away and took him to Pilate, the Roman governor. When Judas, who had betrayed him, realized that Jesus had been condemned to die, he was filled with remorse. So he took the 30 pieces of silver back to the leading priests and the elders. "I have sinned," he declared, "for I have betrayed an innocent man." "What do we care?" they retorted. That's your problem." Then Judas threw the silver coins down in the temple and went out and hanged himself. The leading priests picked up the coins. "It wouldn't be right for us to put this money in the temple treasury," they said, "since it was a payment for murder." And after some discussion, they finally decided to buy the potter's field, and they made it into a cemetery for foreigners. That's why the field is still called the Field of Blood today. This fulfilled the prophecy of Jeremiah that says, "They took up 30 pieces of silver, the price at which he was valued by the people of Israel, and purchased the potter's field as the Lord directed." Jesus' trial before Caiaphas ended in the early hours in the morning. He was taken to the headquarters of the Roman governor. His accusers didn't go inside because it would defile them, and they wouldn't be allowed to celebrate the Passover. So Pilate, the governor, went out to them and asked, "What is your charge against this man?" "We wouldn't have handed him over to you if he weren't a criminal," they retorted. "Then take him away and judge him by your own law," Pilate told them. "Only the Romans are permitted to execute someone," the Jewish leaders replied. And this fulfilled Jesus' prediction about the way he would die. Then they began to state their case. This man has been leading our people astray, telling them not to pay their taxes to the Roman government, and by claiming he is the Messiah, a king. So Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus replied, "You have said it." But when the leading priests and the elders made the accusations against him, Jesus remained silent. "Don't you hear all these charges they're bringing against you?" Pilate demanded. But Jesus made no response to any of the charges, much to the governor's surprise. Then Pilate went back into his headquarters and called for Jesus to be brought to him. "Are you the king of the Jews?" he asked him. Jesus replied, "Is this your own question, or did others tell you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate retorted. "Your own people and their leading priests brought you to me for trial. Why? What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not an earthly kingdom. If it were, my followers would fight to keep me from being handed over to the Jewish leaders. But my kingdom is not of this world." Pilate said, "So you're a king?" Jesus responded, "You say I am a king. Actually, I was born and came into the world to testify to the truth. All who love the truth recognize that what I say is the truth." "What is truth?" Pilate asked. Then he went out again to the people and told them, "He's not guilty of any crime. I find nothing wrong with this man." Then they became insistent, "But he's causing riots by teaching wherever he goes, all over Judea from Galilee to Jerusalem." "Oh, he's Galilean?" Pilate asked. When they said that he was, Pilate sent him to Herod Antipas, because Galilee was under Herod's jurisdiction, and Herod happened to be in Jerusalem at the time. Herod was delighted at the opportunity to see Jesus because he had heard about him, and he had been hoping for a long time to see him perform a miracle. He asked Jesus question after question, but Jesus refused to answer. Meanwhile, the leading priests and the teachers of the religious law stood there shouting their accusations. Then Herod and his soldiers began mocking and ridiculing Jesus. And finally, they put a royal robe on him and sent him back to Pilate. Herod and Pilate, who had been enemies before, became friends that day. Then Pilate called together the leading priests and the other religious leaders along with the people, and he announced his verdict. "You brought this man to me, accusing him of leading a revolt. I have examined him thoroughly on this point in your presence and find him innocent. Herod came to the same conclusion and sent him back to us. Nothing this man has done calls for the death penalty, so I will have him flogged, and then I will release him." Now, it was the governor's custom each year during a Passover celebration to release one prisoner to the crowd, anyone they wanted. This year, there was a notorious prisoner, a man named Barabbas. As the crowds gathered before Pilate's house that morning, he asked them, "Which one do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called the Messiah?" He knew very well that the religious leaders had arrested Jesus out of envy. Just then, as Pilate was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent him a message. "Leave that innocent man alone. I suffered through a terrible nightmare about him last night." Meanwhile, the leading priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas to be released and for Jesus to be put to death. So the governor asked again, "Which of these two do you want me to release to you?" The crowd shouted back, "Barabbas!" Pilate responded, "Then what should I do with Jesus, who is called the Messiah?" And they shouted back, "Crucify him." "Why?" Pilate demanded. "What crime has he committed?" But the mob roared even louder, "Crucify him!" And with one voice, they shouted, "Kill him and release Barabbas to us." Pilate argued with them because he wanted to release Jesus, but they kept shouting, "Crucify him, crucify him." And for the third time, he demanded, "Why? What crime has he committed? I have found no reason to sentence him to death. So I will have him flogged, and then I will release him." But the mob shouted louder and louder, demanding that Jesus be crucified, and their voices prevailed. Pilate saw that he wasn't getting anywhere and that a riot was developing. So he sent for a bowl of water and washed his hands before the crowd, saying, "I'm innocent of this man's blood. The responsibility is yours." And all the people yelled back, "We will take responsibility for his death, we and our children." So Pilate released Barabbas to them, and he ordered Jesus flogged with a lead-tipped whip. I want to go back to the beginning of this entire passage, and I want to bring some things out for your attention. Luke records for us what seems like a really strange conversation between Jesus and his disciples at the beginning of this passage regarding swords and other things. So let me read it to you again. Jesus asked them, "When I sent you to preach the good news and you didn't have money, a traveler's bag, or an extra pair of sandals, did you need anything?" "No," they replied. "But now," he said, "take your money and your traveler's bag, and if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one. For the time has come for this prophecy about me to be fulfilled. He was counted among the rebels. Yes, everything written about me by the prophets will come true." "Look, Lord," they replied, "we have two swords among us." "That's enough," he said. Isn't that a strange conversation? Lots of theology is built around this passage. You hear people use it to justify Christians arming themselves. I've seen people say that, you know, if they do arm themselves, they don't need more than, you know, two weapons among, you know, however many disciples happen to be there. But after this conversation, and just shortly after Jesus talks to his disciples about buying swords, Jesus commands Peter to put his sword away when he tries to use it to save Jesus in the garden. You see, I imagine that Peter and the rest of the disciples at the time that Jesus was about to be taken, they felt like something needed to be done. I mean, it's a critical moment here. And they just kind of reacted in knee-jerk reaction to what they felt was the right thing to do. You see, it wasn't much before this discussion about swords that the disciples were arguing between themselves about which one of them was going to get to sit closest to Jesus in the kingdom of heaven. They were arguing about who was going to be greater than who. You know, I agree with Rob's thoughts about why Judas did what he did to betray Jesus. I believe that Judas did what he felt he needed to be done to push Jesus to establish his kingdom. And from what the disciples were talking about and the way they reacted, I think that they thought they knew what Jesus' mission was, even though he kept telling them, "I'm going to die and be raised. I'm going to die and be raised." And they just didn't get it. They're thinking that Jesus is going to come, be a king. They're going to get to sit in the temple or the palace with Jesus, wherever he is. And, you know, Jesus is going to be here. And here's Peter's throne. And here's, you know, Paul's throne and John's throne. And they're going to have this earthly kingdom. And do you remember that Satan entered Judas when this happened to him? It says that Satan entered Judas. But I also want you to remember back to a time when Satan entered Peter. Or at least he used Peter. Listen to this in Matthew 16. "Now when Jesus came to the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, 'Who do people say the Son of Man is?' And they said, 'Some say John the Baptist, and others say Elijah, and others Jeremiah, and some of the other prophets, or one of the other prophets.' And he said to them, 'But who do you say that I am?' Simon Peter replied, 'You are the Christ, the Son of the living God.' And Jesus answered him, 'Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven.' Then he strictly charged the disciples to tell no one that he was the Christ. And from that time, Jesus began to show the disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and on the third day raised." So here we have it again. Jesus is telling them, here's what's going to happen. "And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, 'Far be it from you, Lord. This shall never happen to you.' But he turned to Peter and he said," what? "Get behind me, Satan." You're a hindrance to me, for you're not setting your mind on the things of God, but the things of man. I don't think Jesus ever called Judas Satan, did he? We don't have it recorded in the scriptures, but he definitely called Peter Satan. But after all this teaching about not setting their mind on earthly things, why would Jesus tell them to get earthly things like swords and money bags? Especially if Jesus would later tell them to keep them in their sheaths. If Jesus didn't want them to take up an earthly cause, then why bother at all? Well, I believe an answer to this question is an answer to many questions you and I have today. I've talked with a lot of you. I hear your worries. I hear your concerns. I share some of them. And many of you have the same concerns. And what I want to do today is bring you a word of encouragement. Now, you may hear me mention some things here and think that I'm airing your concerns in front of the congregation, but believe me, you are not the only one. Okay? It surprises me to talk to y'all, and maybe, I don't know, maybe it's because they're talking about it on television or what, but I hear a lot of the same thing, people saying a lot of the same things. I'll play third person here, I guess. Brian, everything seems to be going wrong with our country. Abortion is out of control. People are becoming more and more godless. And now it seems that whatever rights we have as Americans are being slowly eroded. I don't think that the man charged with running our country really considers God at all. And I feel that if we keep going in the direction we're going, the country may erupt into a war. And I'll have to choose a side. It seems like for every one step forward, our country takes two steps back. I feel like things are becoming desperate and I don't want to be left helpless. Or Brian, I've worked all my life. I did everything mostly right. I've tried to earn an honest living, but it seems that the world is working against me. The bankers are sitting fat and happy, and they won't do anything to try and help me out. I'm losing my house, or I've gotten kicked out of my apartment. Work is scarce. My car is breaking down, and I can't afford to fix it. I have no idea what I'm going to do. In fact, I don't know if there is anything I can do. Yeah, I've made some bad decisions in the past, but I'm really trying now. And look, we have ministries that are struggling to make ends meet. It just seems like for every step forward I take, two steps back. I'm becoming desperate because I feel so helpless. Now listen to how Jesus might respond. Peter, when I sent you out to preach the good news to the poor, and I told you to take almost nothing with you, what did you lack? Nothing, Lord. Peter, when I asked you to take just a few fish and loaves of bread and feed more than 5,000 people, when I asked you to feed them with almost nothing, what did you lack? Nothing, Lord. Peter, when the storm was raging all around you and the boat seemed to be sinking and you were frightened, I was there with you. What did you lack? Nothing, Lord. Peter, while you were fishing all night and came up empty-handed and had nearly lost all hope of making your living that day, and I asked you to fish with almost nothing, what did you lack? Nothing, Lord. Peter, in the Garden of Gethsemane, when all hope seemed to be lost, and you became desperate because I seemed to be doing nothing, I reminded you that my Father could send legions of angels if it were necessary. Peter, and him, what did I lack? Nothing, Lord. Peter, can you see now? My Father's greatest work is being accomplished in the darkest hour when it seems I have nothing to offer. Peter, can you see now? My Father's greatest work will be accomplished in you when in the darkest hour it seems you have nothing to offer. Peter, can you see now? All of the miracles you've seen happen have two things in common, Peter. What are they? Lord, it seems I have nothing to offer but myself, and you were right there with me. Peter, in me, what do you lack? Nothing, Lord. So now, Peter, the country may be failing. Your finances may be in the toilet. Work may be scarce. But lift your mind from the cares of this world because you are in the garden, worried about many things. Satan has asked to sift you like wheat. Wait on the Lord and watch and pray so that you won't fall into temptation. Take heart. Abide in Jesus, and the light in you will shine the brightest when your hour seems the darkest. You can't see it now, but this garden you were in is just a moment. It may seem like everything is going wrong here in the garden, but remember, it's just one more step that is necessary for Jesus to glorify the Father. It isn't you against the world, and it isn't Jesus against the world. Jesus has overcome the world. No, it's you walking in victory with Jesus no matter the path. Jesus promises that our Heavenly Father will take care of you, but you must stay near Jesus and you must believe. The answer to this question is this: what you have or don't have doesn't matter, because you lack nothing in Jesus. Believe it. And I want to finish with some words that Paul wrote to us in Colossians 3. Since you've been raised to new life with Christ, and we're going to go out with this. Since you have been raised to new life in Christ, set your sights on the realities of heaven where Christ sits in the place of honor at God's right hand. Think about the things of heaven, not the things of earth, for you died to this life, and your real life is hidden with Christ in God. And when Christ, who is your life, is revealed to the whole world, you will share in all his glory. So put to death the sinful, earthly things lurking within you, and have nothing to do with sexual immorality, impurity, lust, and evil desires. Don't be greedy, for a greedy person is an idolater, worshiping the things of this world. Because of the sins, the anger of God is coming. You used to do these things when your life was still a part of this world, but now is the time to get rid of anger, rage, malicious behavior, slander, and dirty language. Don't lie to each other, for you have stripped off your old sinful nature and all its wicked deeds. Put on your new nature and be renewed as you learn to know your Creator and become like Him. In this new life, it doesn't matter if you're Jew or a Gentile, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbaric, uncivilized, slave, free, rich, I'm going to add some words, rich, poor, young or old, whether or not they've responded to your dissertation, Christ is all that matters. Amen? Go be the church. Thank you.